Hi, I'm Ray Debicki, and this is the Urbanist Podcast, where we discuss news, information, and ideas about improving cities and quality of life.
And I'm Natalie Argarius. In this week's episode, we're going to talk about the heroes and zeros in the Washington State Legislature. Stick around.
Last week, the Washington State Legislature wrapped up its annual session. It was a 60-day session, one of the short ones because they weren't trying to pass the massive biannual budget. While this long session, short session is normally an incredibly stupid method of scheduling a legislature, it is more acute this year because there were some massively important bills that got squeezed at the end and just ran out of time.
To talk a little more about this year's legislative session, we have special guest Doug Trumm, Executive Director of The Urbanist. Hi, Doug.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Doug, you get to write the Heroes and Zeros article about the legislature this year. Want to start talking a little bit about who you're seeing as the zeros. That's always fun. We'll start with the villains.
Well, the top billing this year for the villain is Kevin Van De Weg, who is the senator from Sequim. And he was a real pain in everyone's side. As usual, he was mentioned in the 2021 piece as well. He is someone known for working with Republicans, not to get things done necessarily, but just to block things and water things down. And this year was no different. His kind of coup de grace was killing 1099, hoping to water it down so that it had to go through conference committee.
And Doug, could you quickly for listeners explain what was 1099?
Yeah, let's start from the basics here. 1099 was one of the bills we were tracking pretty closely. It's a priority from FutureWise, our good partners. They help implement the Growth Management Act. And what this 1099 would do is put climate into the Growth Management Act, which is a really important thing to do because the Growth Management Act is why all these different jurisdictions have to do their comprehensive plans and do them a set way, and that it's now done every 10 years. And a lot of the counties in the Seattle Metro are set to do theirs, including King County, in 2024.
In the House's version of the bill, it actually got a bit specific in that jurisdictions that plan under the Growth Management Act would have had to account for reducing greenhouse gas emissions and vehicle miles traveled. So there was some real accountability in the bill.
Yeah, when you talk to climate experts, if you're actually serious about getting to Paris Accords or to what the IPCC, the international body of climate scientists, say is necessary to avoid the doomsday scenario of, you know, high sea level rise, you know, multiple degrees Celsius increase that's really going to make the Earth less habitable. You know, if you really want to avoid that, you have to tackle vehicle miles traveled because that's where a lot of the emissions come from, transportation, especially in our state, where we have a pretty clean energy portfolio for the most part. So many emissions come from transportation, over half in Seattle. So, you know, you have to tackle that issue, and electric cars can help, but without decreasing the miles traveled, there's just so many emissions still on the table, whether directly or indirectly from land use. And the comprehensive plan is where you could really get at land use.
So the lead zero is the senator from Sequim. Who comes next on the zeros list?
Had to be Mark Mullett. Another repeat. You know, I called both of them zeros last year, and we didn't see much improvement. Mark Mullett was the tag team in the Senate, and they're both on Ways and Means, and which was very unfortunate for this bill because 1099 was kind of cruising along, and then it got to Ways and Means. And then Mullett and Van De Weg got to it, and it was a Van De Weg amendment. As Natalie alluded to, the House version of the bill was much stronger, and they watered it down in Ways and Means with the help of the Republicans on that committee. They didn't have the votes unless they got that amendment passed because Mullett and Van De Weg were stonewalling them. So they watered it down. They took all mention of climate, specific emissions targets, specific vehicle miles travel targets out, gutted the bill. And Mullett's vote was what Van De Weg needed to have that leverage. So, you know, like on one level, you know, it's their fault. I also wonder why we give two of the key moderates in the Senate these prime committees. The Ways and Means Committee is probably the most important committee in the Senate, and we've put zeros on there.
It seems akin to placing a team of arch villains in a position of real power and authority.
There's only so many positions as Secretary of State that you can shift people into in order to get them out as roadblocks in the legislature. Not subtweeting anybody now.
Yeah, I mean, I know who you're talking about. And I think this is the new roadkill caucus, as you may recall from the days of yore, who used to always kill the Democratic governor's agenda. And Mullet and Vandeweg are kind of the new roadkill caucus.
So a couple more zeros on your list?
Yeah, the next two that come to mind, it's another big priority bill that we've talked about before. And it still stings even a month later now. That missing middle housing bill didn't go anywhere. And one of the big reasons why it, you know, both got watered down and didn't go anywhere is Representatives Tana Sen and also Jerry Paulett. Tana Sen's from Mercer Island, and Jerry Paulett is from Pinehurst, a neighborhood of Seattle. Both of them have million-dollar homes, by the way. I just thought I would put that in there. They both were really tying themselves in knots, just did not like that missing middle bill. They felt like it went too far. And, they took out the 6-plex measure for the larger cities, put in 4-plexes. That was Tana Sen's amendment in the House. And then Jerry Paulett got into it and just almost rewrote the whole bill, as he's known to do, because he considers himself the ultimate land use wonk. And, making it more convoluted doesn't necessarily make it better.
All of the zeros that you've mentioned have some commonalities. They pushed status quo opposition to any real improvements to transportation and climate, and they're all Democrats. How much is the zeros an individual award, and how much is it an award for the Democratic supermajority that we have in the Washington State Legislature?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely, as you grade the different legislators, it's certainly that is the undergirding of all of it. Democrats should be able to get what they want. They have huge majorities. The ultimate hero is the supermajority. But the point of the zeros and pointing out, it's Democrats that we're kind of naming and shaming a little bit here is because, Republicans do terrible things all the time. No one's disputing that. And there were some real terrible things that were proposed. They love to whine about the transportation package. They proposed, I think it was $26 billion in spending on highways, but they didn't balance that out with actual real funding. It's typical stuff. Goes without saying, Republicans didn't bring a lot to the table trying to slow things down. But what's really hurts is when people from your own party turn on you. So that's why both the ultimate hero is having a big majority, and why it still wasn't enough in some cases, because you have zeros turning on good ideas that, as far as we can tell, had strong support from the majority.
It is interesting to think that the governor himself, Jay Inslee, was in support of the missing middle housing reform, and yet that wasn't enough to get it past the finish line.
No, and early in Governor Inslee's tenure, that was known, but he had lesser majorities then. I think at the very beginning of his time, he didn't have the Senate yet. So him having, tough slog, that was typical. But then last year we saw him getting the Climate Commitment Act passed, the Clean Fuel Standards passed. He was getting some of his climate agenda finally passed after being known as the climate governor for a lot of years without having really something he could hang his hat on. We saw in the session that wasn't permanent though.
We did have some Democratic legislators, though, take initiative, and those were our heroes this session. Can you kick off for us? Who were you citing as the number one hero of 2022?
All right. You read the article, but spoiler, it's Davina Duer from Bothell. I think we as urbanists have a soft spot for people who came up as council members and working in city government. They really see on the ground what's happening. They really know personally when different stakeholders at the city level are saying, oh, we want our local control, trust us, we're finally going to use it for good this time, they know either by finally doing it, how hard it was, or trying and beating their head against the wall of our system that's designed to block that kind of change. So Davina Dewar is still about Bothell City Council member, and a great representative for her district. And she was the prime sponsor of 1099. She is closely involved with FutureWise, and you know, she pushed this bill with so much energy, and she truly thought she had it, you know, because it was coming out of conference committee and the last days of the session, and you know, they thought they had this agreement, and it just, you know, even she doesn't 100% know what happened. I've talked to her about this, and you know, it seems like the clock ran out on it, but the way that they let themselves get in that position is really unfortunate, and it goes back to the Mullet and Van de Weg move to gut the bill that forces the conference committee. So they're using the procedures to make the path for that bill much harder. And even then they thought they had it and it worked so hard to get it. And yeah, so I still give her a ton of credit because she fought so hard. And she was also, you know, working on a lot of other bills. She backed the Backyard Cottage bill. She backed the Missing Middle bill. She's just someone who gets that, you know, housing and specifically the restrictions that are preventing housing from being developed, whether affordable or market, is a huge obstacle. It's going to make it very hard for the state to succeed on any of its goals.
Another hero that made the list was also included because of her work related to housing.
Yeah, Jessica Bateman was the prime sponsor of the Missing Middle Housing Bill, 1782, and you and I have both covered that a lot and poured a lot of energy into like trying to figure out a way for that to progress and dissect what was happening, why it wasn't. But yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if you all agree, but that was just a really promising bill that I thought it would get farther than it did. And, you know, I think they'll bring it back. And certainly there have been attempts to do that kind of minimum density type bill before. But in that case, the Association of Washington Cities is just really against that, ceding that kind of local control. As I pointed out earlier, they've had local control a long time. And we still see these massive housing affordability crisis, skyrocketing housing prices, over 100,000 $100,000 gain in housing prices in many communities in 1 year. That's crazy. That's more than people are making in their, you know, take-home pay.
I think that's an important thing to reiterate. In that time that this 2-year legislative session has run between the first attempts to pass climate bills and housing with a full Democratic supermajority in the state legislature to the end of the 2022 session, housing prices in many communities have gone up 6 figures. And we can't come out the other side of this legislative session with a reasonable housing bill.
Doug, I think you shared among the urbanist crew an article by the Puget Sound Business Journal that asked, did your house earn more than you last year?
Yeah.
Maybe the question is, did your house earn more than your legislator's house last year?
Most of them are homeowners. And yeah, that really colors how they see the world and what they see as that priority.
Before we plunge into the utter darkness, we have a couple more heroes to talk about. The next on the list was Mia Gregerson.
Yeah, Mia Gregerson's been doing so much great work. She's from SeaTac. One of the bills in particular that stood out to me was the even year election reform bill. Right now, our local elections are decided in odd years, and turnout in odd years is much lower, sometimes half the turnout that we see in even year elections with presidential and congressional races to carry the ticket. And, you know, there's been debate about that, and certainly longer ballots would lead to some drop off lower in the ballot. But overall, places that have, you know, either through quirks or switching this elections, you know, the turnout you see is higher in even years, even down ballot. So she had the bill and it sputtered out. So, you know, not something that she delivered to the finish line, but certainly fought the good fight. A lot of people aren't even willing to talk about election reform because it just rocks the boat and the whole system's set up on the current rules. So I appreciate the people who are willing to be reformers and try things like that. She's also great on the issues of housing and homelessness as well. So certainly a legislator that I'd like to see, you know, continue to get a chance to lead on stuff like that and have support from the rest of her caucus.
Before we dive into talking about some of the specific legislation that failed or passed that we haven't touched on yet, is there anyone else that you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who took, you know, important steps forward. One person that comes to mind is Marcus Roselli, I believe of Spokane. There was embarrassing, maybe not disastrous, but for people who work in the state legislature, it's a pretty dire situation. They're not allowed to have a union, and they work really long hours, especially during session, but there is no rest for the weary. When it comes to the end of session, they're expected to go and work on constituent services. And the first effort to pass a right to unionize bill for the state legislators got killed, and one person that a name I heard on that was Pat Sullivan, who's in majority or is in leadership. I think it's the 47th district he's from. And, you know, he's been there forever. And he said, oh, it's just not ready this year. It's like, you've been there 20 years, Pat. Like, it's time to get it together. Marcus Roselli came in and forged a way forward when Pat said it was impossible. That's setting up a path. I believe by 2024, maybe 2023, they should be able to unionize. And once they do, they can argue for, you know, better working conditions, potentially more pay. They don't make a lot of money doing this really tough on, you know, not a lot of thanks job. And Jamie Peterson, who is, you know, he's been there a long time. And sometimes, you know, he's kind of gotten in the way of certain things. Known as being a little bit of moderate, considering he comes from Capitol Hill, 43rd district, one of the most Democratic district in the entire state. But he really came through this year on a bill that Seattle Subway was really fighting for. Our friends at Seattle Subway really want there to be an accelerated timeline, and we agree, for Sound Transit 3 and light rail expansion in our region. Peterson came through with a tool to provide that. It's a bill that provides enhanced service zones. I think he deserves a shout out for getting that passed.
So there were other wins that happened in the legislature this session. One of those was the sunsetting of community councils. This is something that came to our attention through an op-ed that was written by a person who was part of a group opposing the Houghton and East Bellevue Community Councils, which we had written about a little bit before. Chris Randles had written about how the East Bellevue Community Council had prevented the city of Bellevue from enacting some parking reforms. But this turned out to be a bill that passed with resounding support. So one of the big successes, even if it only impacts a tiny sliver of our state.
Yeah, it was exciting to see that finally happen. It's something that I know that, according to the opponents of that bill, Representative Larry Springer has been trying to do for a long time. And they were really upset about that and let us know about it in the comments. And when we got rid of our comments section on our website, that was one of the nice things about that. The problem with these two is they basically had the power of city councils, but they were within another city with its own city council. They got annexed and they fought for this power, which, you know, at the time, they never intended this to be permanent, right? Like, it's like running two city councils at once. It's silly. So it was a really good thing to pass. And we'll mention that Mark Mullett voted against it, which really cements his villain status. Also, Lisa Wellman. Shout out Lisa Wellman. I don't know why you voted for that bill. They both are from the east side, so maybe it's just in the water over there. But plenty of other east side legislators, you know, were willing to take that risk from a few of their angry neighbors.
Now, Doug, you've gone through the just utter failure that the House Bill 1099 presented. So let's not dwell in that horror show anymore. What else are we looking at, Natalie, as far as like good successful stuff that we can talk about this year?
One of the successes of this legislative session was the passage of the sprawl loophole, which will prevent jurisdictions from basically being able to take advantage of a loophole in the Growth Management Act that made it easier to develop on lands that shouldn't be developed. FutureWise had been advocating for this legislation for a long time, saying that it was in the interest of preserving forests and farmlands, and they were very excited to see that passed.
Yeah, and I think there's... You asked me not to talk about 1099, but I'm going to sneak one more mention in because talking to FutureWise,
I'm going to start the timer.
Okay,
you got to get it in under 30 seconds.
Well, it relates to this sprawl loophole bill because what happened was FutureWise was having a good session, but the way we've set up our system, you know, there's everyone's little fiefdom and there's all these checks and balances that are by virtue of all these different lobbyists working on things, and FutureWise getting that sprawl loophole thing really pissed some people off. And among them were the Washington Realtors and the BIWA, which is a building association that mostly builds, you know, sprawly single family homes. And they were both upset that FutureWise got that. And part of how they decided to react with that was to kill everything else that FutureWise wanted. It appears sometimes those wins have costs because the people who lose, get really riled up and try to block other things. That seems to be part of the stew that was happening after that passed. But at least we got one of those bills passed. And the Washington Realtors, apparently really want to sell these overpriced, sprawly homes out on the fringes or even in cities. And rather than seeing, oh, we could sell four or six homes on this lot and still make money. But I don't know. There must be something to that product.
I'm going to just jump in here and say there was one last big disappointment to mention on the housing front, which was housing benefit districts. It was a relatively complex bill, and it also did not pass. There's some hope that it may come back next session because it could become a great vehicle for raising money for affordable housing.
I think that's an actual good question about the legislative session 2023. It's going to be the long session where they have to pass a budget. Can housing and climate happen in a budget year?
These are two of the most important issues that we're facing today. And we are living at least with the reality of a crazy housing market that is pricing out more and more people all the time. It's touching people at all levels of income, not just in our cities, but throughout our region, in rural areas, in suburban areas. Nobody is safe from this anymore. To see that we couldn't move on it now, it's disappointing, but perhaps when we have a session that's longer with more time, in which also legislators are not feeling the pressure of a vote coming up in the fall, that might make a difference.
I think they're just going to have to put their, adult pants on at some point and stop coming up with excuses. And, you know, whether it's the budget year and you're too busy with the budget or it's the short session and election year and you're too worried about both of those things, you know, they just have to find time to make it a priority. And polling is increasingly showing that housing issue climbing. Now it's at the top from a lot of the polls we're seeing recently. That's the issue that people are concerned about.
I do want to point out that we achieved something this session that we have not achieved in a long time, which is passing a transportation package. We don't have enough time to go into this now. And so what I'm going to recommend is this. I'm going to recommend that our listeners check out the episode of Hacks and Walks, in which our very own Ryan Packer was interviewed and provided a ton of information about this transportation package. So I will drop the link to that episode in this episode description online.
Promos for other podcasts. We love this.
And I think that is going to be what they try to run on. And, you know, the calculation that people keep making is that highway spending and other transportation spending to some extent is popular. And, as far as Democrats keeping their majorities, hopefully they're right in some of those cases because they put their emphasis there instead of on housing.
All right, well, that's it for this week's podcast. We look forward to your comments. Please email your list of zeros, heroes, and other legislative honors to podcasts@theurbanist.org. We also have a few things to keep an eye on. Mark Dones, CEO of the King County Regional Homeless Authority, will join The Urbanist for a conversation on April 12th at 6:30. We'll be talking about the organization's work, future plans, and role in corralling pain-in-the-butt suburban cities to get anything done about housing our neighbors. Register for the live meeting and get some questions in, or catch up afterwards on our YouTube channel. For more information, visit our website at www.theurbanist.org.
Special thanks to Doug Trum today, The Urbanist's Executive Director and Head Legislative Sausage Maker. Thank you, Doug.
Anytime.
Thanks, Doug. I'm Natalie Argarius. Thank you for tuning in.
And I'm Ray Dubicki. That's it for this week's podcast, and we'll talk again soon.